to the Conservative Woman's Guide. I'm your host, Peyton Smith, and today I'm joined by Paula Scanlon, ambassador at Independent Women's Forum and Independent Women's Voice, and former collegiate swimmer at the University of Pennsylvania, for an episode on the Conservative Woman's Guide to Protecting Women's Sports. Paula graduated from the University of Pennsylvania, where she was a member of the women's swim team. She broke her silence in June of 2023 on her experience as a teammate of Leah Thomas and the efforts of her college's administration and student body to silence her and suppress her right to free speech. More than a dozen college athletes are now suing the NCAA for its transgender policies, accusing it of violating their Title IX rights. Title IX and women's sports have been topics of contention on college campuses since Leah Thomas participated in the national championship in 2022. We are eager to hear about Paula's experience, but before we get into the interview, make sure you're subscribed to the Conservative Woman's Guide wherever you get your podcasts, and if you haven't already, leave us a 5-star review. Welcome, Paula.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So to start out, tell us a little bit about your swimming career. Like, when did you start swimming? How did you end up at UPenn? All the good stuff.
Yeah, so I started swimming competitively at age 8. Weirdly enough, my town had this project to build an Olympic-sized pool, and they really wanted to push aquatic sports, not just swimming. They felt, you know, diving, water polo, swimming, all of it, you name it. And my parents just thought it would be a good outlet for me. And at the beginning, it wasn't necessarily something that I really loved. Swimming is hard. It's cold. I was really skinny as a little kid, so being in a cold pool was maybe not my favorite thing in the world. But when I was in sixth grade, my brother went off to college, and he went to the University of Pennsylvania, but he was not an athlete. And when he went off to college, something sort of sparked, and I realized, wow, like, this is my opportunity to do something that's my own and be my own person. I wasn't as good of a student as him in the classroom. And so I really wanted, you know, an opportunity to really do something. And that's really when I started taking swimming seriously. And so by, you know, seventh grade, eighth grade, I was placing at states, and I'm from Connecticut. So I, you know, top 3 finishes in events, the state level when you're like 13, 12 years old. Yeah. And then I obviously continued to swim in high school, where I was captain of my swim team my senior year. My junior and senior year, we won our high school league championship. And I also still have the 400-yard freestyle relay record that stood since 2016 is when we set it. 2017, I think, actually. 2017. That's actually been the longest-standing record in our league. So,
well, congratulations.
I mean, yeah, obviously it was back when I was a 17-year-old. But, you know, just all of that stuff. And every single athlete who ends up getting to the collegiate level has that background. You know, every single one of my teammates has placed at in their various states, and they've either been captain of their high school team or they were their captain for multiple different years. You know, all of those accomplishments are pretty standard among athletes that end up making it to the college level, and not just in swimming. Even friends I met on other teams, they also had those similar types of accolades. So obviously all of that. And then I wanted to go to the same school as my brother, but I wanted to obviously do it in my own way. So I was able to go to the University of Pennsylvania, have swimming as a way to help me get in, and also rely on some of the academic accomplishments I've had as well. And it was really the perfect combination. And the University of Pennsylvania to me really was a dream school. It was, you know, in a city. It was had all these different programs, and I could major in anything that I wanted to, and they would have a good program for it. So I went, and obviously things turned out very different than I would have imagined back when I was 17 and I chose to go there. But it was definitely a very surprising experience. So my freshman year was very normal swimming wise. I mean, obviously there's normal challenges that come with being any college student, but my fall of my sophomore year, we had a team meeting that really changed everything. So the men had a team meeting, and then the women had a team meeting after, which was very bizarre because we're a combined program. So generally speaking, the men are never doing something that we don't also need to do. And the men finish their meeting, and we see a member of the men's team staying back. And I was wondering, why is a member of the men's team still here? And our coach turns to him and says, "This is your meeting." And I said, "Why is a member of the men's team leading a women's team meeting?" And of course, you could probably guess by now, this men's team member was named William Thomas. And he looks at us and just says, "I'm transgender. I will be transitioning to your team next season. I'm now going by she, her pronouns." And that was it. There was no further discussion. There was no follow-up conversations. There was no asking us how we felt or if it made us comfortable. None of that. And that is really when what I like to call the slow moving train wreck started. And obviously, I mean, it didn't end up becoming a reality until 2 years later, because again, COVID happened and delayed the season an additional year. But so the fall of 2021 is when Thomas officially joined your team. And upon doing that, he had a locker in our locker room like everyone else. The university never once addressed it to us. The incoming freshmen probably had no idea that this was happening. And it was, they were acting as if business was normal. They did not address the giant elephant in the room, which was that a 6'4" tall man who swam on the men's team for 3 years was now a member of the women's team full-fledged with no further conversation. It definitely felt unreal and just confusing. I started to see really that, okay, this university is not just allowing this to happen, but encouraging this to happen. And that really started I started to see that the Ivy League and the University of Pennsylvania and all these schools that stand for these things, they don't have any real values and they don't actually care about real athletes and real women and people who work hard. And especially if you have a dissenting viewpoint, they don't want you to be able to speak that.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. What were the reactions from your teammates when all of this was going on at the very beginning?
Yeah, at the beginning, a lot of people were very questioning about it. People were saying, you know, this is someone who's been on the men's team. How can this possibly be fair? And I obviously had the same concerns. I was looking up the policies that allowed this to happen. And we found that the NCAA had this pamphlet that essentially in one line just said, if you suppress your testosterone for 1 year, that you are able to compete on a women's team. And that to me raised a lot of concerns, because testosterone is one hormone in the human body. There's so many other factors that make men and women different. And in fact, to this day, even with the crazy medical technology that we're seeing, we still have no way to properly take someone who's born male and convert them to female. You can't change your chromosomes. You can't change the shape of your bones. It would involve the most invasive procedure imaginable, and the size of your heart, the size of your lungs, all of it. And it's just not possible scientifically or in any way to convert that way. And it was so concerning that they didn't take that into consideration. And a lot of my teammates, again, were very, very quiet about how they felt. It was really, you could have a one-on-one conversation with somebody and they would say that they were very unhappy with the situation. And then when we would talk as a team or as a group, they would go to the group and act like having someone who's a man swimming on a women's swim team was somehow progress and was, you know, making great strides towards civil rights and all of the you know, the things that they say, which was insane to me that there were so many people who were willing to sort of say one thing, believe one thing, and yet out loud say something completely different.
Yeah. What were some of the early problems you noticed after Thomas joined the team? Was there anything that really stuck out to you?
Yeah. So my close friend on the swim team, who was obviously objected to him being in our team in our locker room, she actually got the locker next to Thomas. And she went to her coach and she was very upset. And he just said, I'm sorry, there's really nothing I can do about it. And so what she ended up doing was she changed. So there's this single stall family bathroom outside in the hallway. And interestingly, originally when Thomas first announced in 2019 that he would be transitioning, we were told that he would possibly be changing in the locker room. Again, that was never like a formal conversation. It was more like a few girls went to our coach and our coach said that they would potentially do that. And of course, when the season started, that is not what happened. So my friend ended up walking out and changing in that locker room every day for practice. So she would grab her stuff, walk into the hallway and walk back in. And everybody knew what she was doing. And everyone would like kind of lock eyes and see what she was doing. And nobody said anything about it. And that to me was very concerning, that it was us women that had to make ourselves comfortable. It was us women that had to go out of our way to find solutions to the problem. And that is very highlighted by the story of this girl, Kylie. She swam for NC State at the NCAA championship. And she found a janitor's closet that was unlocked with dirty mops and janitor's tools that she chose to change in during the NCAA championship, because it just wasn't worth the stress of having to worry about changing with a man in her locker room. And that really shows how far us women had to become the problem solvers, had to go out of our way to solve these problems, when the NCAA and the Ivy League and all these institutions they're supposed to be the ones protecting us. It shouldn't be on us to find these solutions, yet we were the ones going out of our way, looking into solutions. And that janitor's closet story, when I heard that, and obviously Kylie's now a good friend of mine, it was like, of course that happened, but also that is so crazy that you would just say it's worth it to change in a tight closet with dirty tools. And also her teammates and her shared it. They would go take turns going in and out of it. And I think there was another team that shared that area and found that that space as well. So if that doesn't show again, like how insane this whole thing was, I think those stories really highlight that.
That's crazy. And to think that some people think that's progress for women and our equality.
Yeah. And Riley Gaines, obviously a huge name in this issue, also a great friend of mine. She said that she went up to an official at the NCAA championship and said, how is this allowed? And they said, don't worry, don't worry. We made the bathrooms unisex.
Great.
And so her response was, right, so you're telling me any man and any coach and any father and any male who's on this pool deck can come into the locker room? And they're like, yes, precisely.
Fantastic.
And so again, if this doesn't show how much of a attack on women it really is, again, the history of the women's bathrooms, they lead back sort of to the Industrial Revolution time, where women didn't have, they started working in factories and they didn't have their own facilities, and they were getting attacked in these bathrooms. So they would either go on the street or go in huge groups and sort of huddle around each other. There is a reason we have women's only spaces. And again, it's not because of anything other than the fact that we have these protected spaces that we need. And to deny that and to say now they're actually open to anyone, it defeats all the rights that women fought for even way back in the day. And then additionally with sports and Title IX, that's a little bit more recent, the last 52 years, also taking away all those things that the other women fought for back then. And that's why we're seeing actually a lot of older women really upset about this. There's a lot of older Olympians and a lot of older women who didn't have Title IX at the beginning and then achieved it, are able to play sports, and now they're watching it be taken away from women once again.
Yeah. How did you feel being Thomas's teammate?
It was definitely a really tough situation to be in. I think a lot of people I don't talk about this generally a lot because it's just not as interesting to people, but emotionally it was really, really challenging for me. It was a very isolating time. It really made me question my own sanity and question my own beliefs in a way, right? When everyone around you is telling you that you're a horrible person for being uncomfortable with something, or you're a horrible person for saying something is unfair, it really does take a toll on you. And this is not unique to me. This is so many athletes across all the different schools that were swimming were emotionally manipulated. For example, the girls at Harvard were emailed, like in writing, emailed saying that if they spoke out against this, that they would be contributing to someone committing suicide. That is emotional manipulation at its, you know, prime. And yeah, I think that is something a lot of people don't talk just about, because of course it's unfair and of course it's uncomfortable and of course it's violating. But the other thing is it is mentally and emotionally taxing on all the women who are forced to deal with this. And this is not just in swimming. This is in any sport that this is happening. And all of the women who have reached out over, you know, the various different years of all of this stuff, it's really just something that a lot of people don't take into account. Just the first thing that these people tell me when they're forced to compete is they're saying, I'm so upset that people are calling me names, and I'm so upset that this is happening, and I feel hopeless. And I think that's something a lot of people don't talk about. And so, yeah, it was definitely challenging. And the other thing is it was also very embarrassing. I almost felt embarrassed to be a part of a program that allowed something like this to happen. And I think to this day, the University of Pennsylvania swim team will always have this reputation. And people say, oh, like that team. And that is really upsetting because, again, there's so many women who have worked so hard for so many years to achieve, to represent the school, to be on the team. And all of that is washed away with one person being allowed to join a women's team as a man. And that's something I still struggle with that, right? It's this hard situation where I'm like, I'm really thankful for my opportunities, of course, but how can I possibly be happy when that was the outcome of the team? That was my senior year.
Yeah, especially if that was your dream school. Now, every time you look back on your college experience and that's like the standout highlight, I can't even imagine. How do you think having more trans athletes will end up impacting women in sports?
I think it'll be the erasure of women's sports entirely. I think something a lot of people don't realize is, right, coaches are hired to win. And it's sometimes people don't like that because it's like, oh, that makes them sound bad, like bad people. It's not.
It's true.
It does, but it's it's the goal of being on a sports team. You have a competition, so there's a winner. And again, it doesn't diminish anyone who doesn't win. It doesn't diminish the accomplishments of people who aren't given the trophy at the end of the day. Of course not. But that is the point of competition. And if we're going to allow men to compete in women's sports, coaches are going to be incentivized to recruit men to be on women's sports teams. Because if their competitors are doing it, they're going to want to do the same thing too. And again, this is not necessarily even against the coaches. Of course, in a perfect world, we would say that they'd all have great morals and never agree to do that. But they're being put in a situation where they have to do that or they're going to lose their job. That's not fair to the coaches. That's not fair to the athletes. And interestingly, there are some people in that fringe radical left that actually believe that we should just get rid of gender sports or sex-based sports categories altogether. They say, I think it'd actually be great if we just get rid of it, which is even worse. Saying, okay, well, the whole point of creating this women's sports category was so women could have equal opportunity. And it's not to say that there aren't women that are better than men at sports. Of course there are. But this is so, the category was created so there is equal opportunity. There's opportunity for women to have playing time. Because if we have a co-ed team, they're not going to be rostered. They're not going to get game time. And also, not even to say how men and women's sports are very different. In basketball, right, the diameter of the women's basketball is smaller than the diameter of the men's basketball. In volleyball, the net is lower for women than it is for men. This is just two examples. I mean, softball and baseball are two entirely different sports completely. And so I think if we allow this to keep happening, there won't be women's sports anymore. And all the progress that had been fought 52 years ago to get Title IX will have been for nothing, and all of that hard work and fight will just simply disappear before our eyes. And it already is. I mean, every time we hear a story of a trans athlete being on a women's sports team, there is a woman that was not allowed to be part of that roster or denied the opportunity to win the trophy. And there's been hundreds of these cases already. So that's already potentially thousands and thousands of women impacted. And that's already too much. And if we keep going further, it'll be every female athlete.
Yeah. Going back to the differences, I remember even back in like elementary school gym class, you had those physical fitness tests and you had the standards for the boys and you also had the standards for the girls. And it's crazy that it was so normal. And now it's just being erased, all of those differences.
And there are people who actually think that that's progress. I gave a speech at the University of Iowa the other day, and there were people screaming at me, like, the protesters in the crowd telling me, like, get rid of the categories. Women are equivalent to men. Like, screaming that at me while I'm giving a speech. And the most ironic part is that Caitlin Clark, the best women's basketball player, goes to the University of Iowa, is a player on that team, and she would not be the standout female athlete that she is if she was forced to play in the University of Iowa men's team. And for them to not even acknowledge that is diminishing to female athletes, but it's also diminishing to her being one of the best women's basketball players in the NCAA right now. She's amazing. And again, she's an amazing person and an amazing athlete, but it's not discriminatory to her accomplishments to say that if she was forced to play against men, that she wouldn't have stood out the same way.
What do you think of the, I know on social media, there are like these proposed solutions to the issue of having a separate category for trans athletes specifically. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't necessarily object to it, but there's a few things we should point out about it. First is some places where it's implemented, nobody has entered the category, which is a waste of everyone's time, resources, money. Second thing is if we have this third category, and at the beginning, when I first started this, I said, okay, maybe. If you go and look in this third category, or sometimes they call it the non-binary category, every person who wins that category is male. Or they're females who are taking testosterone, which is equivalent to doping in pretty much every other sporting category possible. So now we have a third category to highlight men or people who are cheating. And I think that that is problematic in a lot of ways, if that's already not abundantly clear, but it's once again, right? So now men have two categories they can be in and win in. And then also on top of that, in some of these sporting events that they have this third category, they have to now split the prize money between three categories. So men and women, originally, those original categories, they're losing out as well, because this prize money needs to be given out to this third category. And so that's discriminatory to the male and the female athletes that are already in these categories. So again, maybe there's some instances where it could work, right? If it's like an amateur event, there's no money involved and the male and the female categories are very protected and they just want to kind of have this third thing. Sure. But I know that there a lot of people are starting to see the issues as we've implemented this. I know actually in the running world, yeah, the non-binary category has the same time standards as the women's category. So if you want to qualify for the Boston Marathon, for example, which is like the most coveted marathon qualification, if you want to be a man and qualify for Boston, you just have to register in the non-binary category and suddenly you only have to run the women's time. So again, we're still giving people who want to abuse the rules opportunities to do so. And I don't think that that is what fair sport should be about.
Yeah. Going back to your experience, were you scared to speak up in the beginning?
Definitely. The hardest part for me was really feeling isolated in my opinions. I think, again, a lot of my teammates did agree with me, and they still do agree with me. But the university made it very clear to us that us speaking out was something we would regret. They told us, and they sent administrators in, and they told us, if you speak out about this, you will regret it. They said, you will spend the rest of your life tainted by your stance on this. And they said that you'll never be able to get a job and you'll forever be remembered on the internet as a horrible person. And additionally to that, they told us that they were there to make us okay with competing alongside and undressing alongside a man. And they said, if you still object, we're here for you. Please seek psychological services. And they had an administrator from psychological services telling us that they were there for us. And that to me was really a turning point. I think after that, a lot of people were questioning their own sanity and they were saying, well, I don't want to give up everything I've worked for. I don't want to give up my possibility to get a job. I don't want to give up the rest of my life and to be publicly tainted in a negative way. I think that's something that, especially, you know, 18 to 22 years old, that's not something you're ready for. I think obviously older people, they're like, I don't care. I've made my career, I've made my life, I have a family.
And yeah,
when you're young, it's really hard to ask people to sacrifice those things. And so I was definitely very, very afraid at the beginning. And I think for me, a lot of people ask me this, and my turning point on this issue really was the story of Peyton McNabb. Peyton was a high school volleyball player who was knocked unconscious by a male volleyball player on the opposing team, ended up paralyzing half her face. She still struggles with health issues from the event, and she was not able to play sports in college. And I saw this story happen. And at this point in time, I had graduated already. I was working the normal job that they told me I would lose if I spoke out, right? I was doing what the University of Pennsylvania wants from their graduates: to graduate, to go get a normal job, to be quiet, to have their opinions, and I did that. And again, during the season, I was doing anonymous things and I was speaking up to people who would listen around me, but I wasn't doing anything really, truly vocal about it. And I saw the story of Peyton. I said, okay, this is not myself being uncomfortable. This is not us losing trophies or losing a spot at the roster. This is permanent life-altering injuries done to women. And if I continue to stay quiet and not tell people about the tactics that were used and help people understand why the universities are silencing their students and why there's a fringe group of people that want men to compete in women's sports, if I don't highlight what happened, I'm part of the problem because I'm allowing these people to get away with continuing to hurt people. And seeing what happened to Peyton really was saying, okay, I felt immense guilt. I said, okay, I'm contributing to that happening by being silent. And I think that's a lot of the thing people don't realize, and they still get messages that say, people are saying, I'm scared to talk about this. if you are silent, you are part of the problem. And once I came to that realization, I realized that I could not be silent anymore because it would eat me alive. And it did for many months that I was silent. I thought it would go away. I thought I would be able to ignore how I was feeling, but in reality, it only actually got worse. And I felt even more guilt as time went on. And not everyone necessarily has that like same guilt or the same feeling. And it does take like a different, I guess, type of person. I think like I'm pretty religious and I think maybe that like plays into a part of it. I do see a lot of people still struggling with that. And I don't blame them because I was right there before. But that is really what motivated me to speak out. And I encourage everyone to talk. And this does not mean doing interviews and going on the news or even tweeting about it, which I know Twitter is like this whole crazy place. I think the biggest thing is really just being vocal to people in your community as well and being honest. I know that this is something that comes up a lot. And even when I was on the team, people would sort of ask me about it and they would wait until they knew how I felt before they would share their opinion. And I think we have to go away from that. We have to say, this is what I believe. And I don't care what this person I'm talking to's response to is. I stand firm in my beliefs. And this is not a crazy thing to believe that men and women are different and men should play women's sports, but here we are.
What has happened to you since you've started to speak out?
Yeah, I've received a lot of support, but I've also received a lot of hate, and it's a mixed bag. So it's very interesting. I mean, there's still a lot of efforts to silence us. There's a lot of mainstream media that won't even cover this issue. And there's a lot of politicians that are suggesting that if we don't want men to play women's sports, that we're somehow bigoted and hateful and we're harming women as a whole, which is not true. This is really about women. But I think overall, there's a lot more people that support it. I think the polling has shown at least 80% of the population really agrees on this issue. I think the other interesting thing I will see is this is the one issue that we have leftists that agree with us on, which should be telling how crazy it is. Martina Navratilova, she comes up a lot in these types of interviews. She's as left-leaning as they come, but on this issue, she's with us. And it's funny because she gets hate from her own side. And I mean, I think almost in a way, it's harder for her to speak on this issue and other leftists because they're going to get hate from their own side. But there are a few, I mean, limited number, but there are a few feminist groups that are speaking about this, that are saying they believe in all the other, you know, leftist feminism causes. But on this issue, they say, no, of course you can't be a woman. You can't play in women's sports. I mean, I think the bigger thing is also these people who identify as women are insisting to lesbians that they need to date men again, which is exactly the opposite of what they've been advocating for so many years. So that to me is very interesting that there's a lot of leftists that are waking up to this. And it's very fun when we all sort of come together as this coalition. And I'm like, wow, I don't agree with them on anything else, but on this issue, they're with me. And I welcome it. And it's sort of like bringing back, I mean, a society where we used to be able to have conversations. I think that this is like a glimmer of hope. I mean, it's not everything, yeah. And there's still crazy people that hate us. But seeing this issue bringing so many different people from so many different backgrounds, it is a little bit encouraging for a future where we could go back to where we could have conversations and not have people be called names and people be canceled for their opinion, you know?
I think it's really telling having people from both sides of the aisle come together to support one issue. Pivoting ever so slightly, do you think organizations who previously aligned with the Me Too movement that blew up a few years ago, do you think they'll change course and end up standing with women now?
No, because they've been so incredibly quiet. And it is so hard for me to watch this because at the time when the Me Too movement was happening, I sort of had the feeling that it was a political movement that was not intended to actually get justice for women. It was intended to advance political agendas. The Kavanaugh hearing was a huge example of that, and it always really rubbed me the wrong way. But I wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think maybe I'm a little bit too hopeful about these things. I wanted to say maybe, you know, it's just presented in the wrong way, but it really is about empowering women. And nope, it has proved to be exactly what I thought it was. And what's so telling to me is there's a lot of, I talk a lot about having been assaulted prior to going to Penn, and that made it extra uncomfortable for me to undress next to a man. And there's these trans activists that are seeing me share that story and they're saying, she's lying. She's a liar, which is exactly what they advocated, saying you can't believe all women. They're not just not doing that. They're outright tweeting at me saying that I'm a liar, saying that they don't believe me, saying that it sounds made up. That was one of the tweets that they said. And so that showed me exactly their true colors. That showed me how they feel on this issue, that it's not believe all women. It's believe all women that can advance our political agenda. And it's really upsetting to have that happen. It is a little discouraging, but ultimately, I mean, I think I saw back then that it probably wasn't the movement that we wanted it all to be. It wasn't about empowering women. And I think they will continue to be quiet. I mean, this issue has been going on long enough for them to have said something, and none of them have.
How do you feel about the reaction of other women's organizations on this issue? Have there been any really standout women's organizations?
Yeah, and most of the women's organizations that have been supportive of us are on the conservative side, which is so interesting because I always viewed feminism and just women's rights in general as sort of like a taboo thing that led to this type of stuff, right? Or you view it as abortion. I think that's the biggest thing everyone always assumes, it's you're an abortion advocacy group or whatever. But I've really started to see, first off, like my own brand of women's rights and standing up for women, and to mean so much more than I was sort of forced to believe it was as a day. This really is about having a community of women that want to uplift each other. This is about having a community of women that want to have our own spaces, and also women that want to be mothers and women that embrace motherhood and all of these different things. And so it's obviously been happening for a long time, but I think really joining a women's organization myself and working with all these other women's organizations, I've started to see what womanhood can mean sort of from the conservative perspective, which I never really ever imagined. Because I know, again, it's really the media that sort of made me believe that maybe it wasn't possible, but it is. And again, the other women's issues that people believe matter to women. I'm constantly told I hate women because of the abortion issue. And I'm saying, well, there's so many different women's rights issues that matter in this world. And so that to me is something I've really started to look into and see what these other women's issues are. And again, this is obviously a huge one of them. And having women be able to be mothers and given the opportunity to do that and to not be silenced and not be put down by people pretending to be women.
I think it goes to show women's communities of women specifically are so, so important, and women should just be uplifting each other no matter what. But pivoting again, ever so slightly, can you just tell us very briefly about the lawsuit against the NCAA? It was announced recently, and what kind of impact do you hope this lawsuit will have on this issue in the future?
Yes. So I am not part of this lawsuit. The details of the lawsuit pertain to the NCAA championship, where I did not compete. But, you know, big Riley Gaines, obviously, leader on that lawsuit. So the lawsuit is against the NCAA, and it is about them violating Title IX and allowing men to not just compete against women, but also enter a locker room with women. And it's something that's very important. Honestly, we probably should have done it sooner. I think that we really tried to work with the NCAA a lot on this issue. We tried to request meetings. We handed them a petition letter. We had something with 70,000 plus signatures saying that there were 70,000 plus athletes, former athletes, parents of athletes that disagree with men competing in women's sports, and they still did nothing. And I think the next obvious step for anything like that is to file a lawsuit, which is obviously what was just done. And I think it will be successful. I do think the NCAA and all the other organizations that are allowing this to happen do need to be held accountable. And as annoying as lawsuits are, I think that that is the right way to go about it. And it is the only way really to put pressure on these organizations to make real change. So I'm very curious to see how obviously they respond, how they try to, you know, attack us back on having this stance. But the girls at the competition were discriminated against. And I think the biggest thing is to also, I think part of the lawsuit is also trying to rewrite these titles, right? Reassign the trophies, reassign the points. I mean, that could be, I think that it wouldn't have been a problem at this NCAA championship, but there could be instances where if, you know, a man competing in the women's category gains a certain number of points, if those points were to be reassigned, the team that ultimately wins in the end would be a different team. And I think that's something that they point out in these various instances in the NCAA, is that if you reassign these points, the actual outcome of the winners of the whole championship might be different. And that's something that I think these organizations haven't taken into account, that, again, you're dramatically altering the outcome of all these competitions, and you're denying these women the opportunity to be an All-American or to get recognition.
Yeah.
And so that's also an aspect that they're pushing the NCAA on.
Yeah, I was going to say, it kind of ties back into your earlier point of allowing males to compete in women's sports is essentially just taking spots away and opportunities away from women in general.
Absolutely. And that's really why the NCAA needs to be held accountable and all the other organizations that allow this. I know there's some international sporting bodies, high school level sporting bodies that continue to allow this. And again, it's really so important that they know this is wrong. And they know that the most people, again, the polling, 80% of Americans agree on this issue. And it's crazy that we're letting maybe 20% or even smaller minority group dictate the rules for everyone.
To end off, what is one piece of advice that you would give your past self?
I think the biggest thing I've struggled with in my life in general on this issue is really worrying about what people thought about me, or worrying that I might lose that job, or worrying that I might lose some friends. And it's so much easier said than done. But I think the biggest thing is, if your friends can't support you for your opinions and your beliefs, they weren't your friends to begin with. And if a job doesn't want you to be employed there for your beliefs or what you're saying out loud, then that's not somewhere that you want to work. And I know it's so much easier said than done, but I think once you realize that, a lot of different doors open. I've obviously made new friends since losing friends that disagreed with me, but I've made better quality friends. And obviously, I never got fired from a job for my beliefs. So that never even happened. They make you believe that that would be the outcome. It won't necessarily be. And so I think the biggest thing is to just be true to who you are and true to your beliefs, and that will get you further than anything else will. And I've really found that it's been, just a huge weight off my shoulder to just be able to say what I think and to not worry about the people who are going to react negatively. Because even if you are as tame as possible and saying nothing at all, someone is still going to always have a problem with you. And I think once I realized that, it got a lot easier.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of our women on college campuses say, because they receive a lot of pushback, lose a lot of friends once they start speaking out about their beliefs on their campus. And they said once they just kind of like stopped caring what other people thought, life got a whole lot easier. They made friends who supported them no matter what, and life has just overall gotten better for them. But thank you so much for joining us today, Paula. I've loved hearing your story.
Thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it.
It was truly great to get to interview Paula and discuss the work she's doing to help protect women's sports. Subscribe to the Conservative Woman's Guide wherever you get your podcasts so that new episodes automatically download. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review and share this episode with your friends. We'll see you next week.